Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
It's time for the Dr. Tanji Show.
Hey, you're on the air with Dr. Tanji. Talk to me.
As soon as I hear your voice, Dr. Tanji, my day is better.
Hey, Dr. Tanji, I took your advice and made some changes in my life. And you know what? I've been winning ever since. Thank you for your advice.
Now, here's Dr. Tanji.
Hey, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the show that was created and founded on Kingdom Principles. A show that's designed to help you move from where you are to where you want to be. A show that allows guests to come in and tell us, you know, how did you get here at the top of the hour? I am truly excited for the gentleman that will be joining us very soon here. He is a gentleman that has evolved, or I guess manifested, his dreams and goals and ideas from the inside out. He will show us how he did it. He'll be very candid about it, and open, honest, and sincere. And even today. And I'm excited to have him. When I heard about him, I said, yep, he's got to come here. So I'm excited. But before all of that goodness, I want to talk just a little bit about crises and what is a crisis. You know, you hear about, you know, the world is in a crisis, or I'm having a crisis and I don't understand. Let's talk just a little bit about it. It's going to be a two-part series. We'll talk about a crisis. We'll talk about the mindset you need in a crisis, because there's some benefits to it. Next week, we'll finish up with the benefits of a crisis and what you need to do exactly what you've been placed in the earth to do. Now, crisis. You think about a crisis, and for all intents and purposes, I had to write down some things, because if I don't, I'll just be all over the place, and that's not fair to our guest. And I'm so excited he's here. When you think about circumstances that occur that you have no control over and you didn't cause them, that's a crisis. You lose your job. They laid you off. No reason of your own, no, for no fault of your own, that's a crisis. When you're working and you're not making ends meet, and you're about to lose, or you lose your home and you lose your car and those things, those tangible things, that's a crisis, you know? So what do you do when it looks like all hell is coming up against you? Do not fear. A crisis is an incubator of creativity. Okay? Many times we're not creative as we should be until a crisis occurs. Now, a few little things that I want you to remember in a crisis so that you don't lose yourself, you don't lose your sanity. And I'm talking to you and to me, and to anyone who dared to listen and do something about it, all right? One, crisis demands, it places a demand on us for us to think about an old problem in a new way, okay? Crisis is a new way to think and advances over old ideas. Sometimes the only way for us to move is for something to happen and to push us into thinking the way God would have us to think. Crisis come to improve us because we've been stuck in an old way for too long. Crisis comes to produce growth and a sense of development. Crisis will even create an opportunity if you're open for it. And my favorite, crisis produces and manifests the true leader that you say you are. It does. You're not really a leader until crisis comes and proves to you that you're a leader. Anybody can lead when things are going good. You got $25,000, $50,000 in the bank. Yeah, I can lead pretty well. But what happens when I have nothing and I still have to show up? That's a crisis, right? Number 8, crisis ignites your passion for a renewed vision in your life. It does. So we give God praise for crises, not necessarily while we're in it, because we don't want to think like that. But for all intents and purposes, when a crisis comes, the teacher's there. You're ready now to learn. Now, God has placed in us purpose. And he's going to get purpose out of us if you say yes to purpose. So when he allows a crisis to come, take heart. You're going to be okay. I promise you. And I don't like to make promises. I guarantee you're going to be just fine. Keep your focus. I tell my own family and my own self, in the midst of a crisis, this is what we're going to do. Yeah, we may cry. We may want to throw up our hands and say, I'm done. I quit. No more of this. But why? Why get stuck in doing the same thing over and over again and expect something to come out of it that will benefit not only you, but will benefit the people that you've been placed here to serve? You remember, you serve people with your gifts, right? That's the whole purpose of having gifts. They're not for us to say, hey, look at me, look what I can do. But our gifts, they really do make room for us, and they bring us before great men. So let's get busy, even in our crises. I told you that there was someone that was going to be joining us. This gentleman has written a book, Colorful Conversations.
Confessions.
Thank you. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
He is, you probably saw him on the Body Revenge.
Body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Khloe Kardashian. And when I saw the clips of the show, my heart began to just, it wasn't bleeding because he was, oh my God, he's crying. It was bleeding because, wow, look at the transparency there. He is none other than Mr. Deron
Anderson. Yay.
Thank you so very much for joining me.
Thank you.
I always get excited when I see someone who is living their best life.
I do.
I get excited. I get it. I get motivated, and it inspires me even the more. Mm-hmm. You know, I welcome your story because your story has a lot of
moving parts. It does.
I've got to ask you this proverbial question: mm-hmm. How did you get here?
To the show, or what do you mean?
Take us back to. From Detroit.
Oh, okay. So I was in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm a faith-based person, and so I used to be a cheer coach, making $50 a week, and but I still tithe my money. I was doing that, and I think another job, I can't remember what the name of the job was at the time, and I was making maybe between $50 and $75 a week. I had just got saved and in the church, and I talk about tithing.
Mm.
And a lot of people get that confused with just money because it says tithe the tenth. And I believe that's about time. That's about health. That's about everything. What you reap is what you sow. You can't put in money and expect good health. You have to put out good energy to get good energy, things like that. So I read about it, and it was 10%. And I was making maybe $30 to $50. So I would pay my little $5 or $3 in tithe. And people in the church, they didn't mean no harm. But it was like, baby, you need that. So go ahead and keep that. You need it. You need it. You know, I was 18 at the time. And so, and they weren't, and these are really good sisters in the church, but, and they weren't saying it of lack of faith. For sure. They were just saying, you know, I was living with my mom, and yeah.
Yeah.
But some just kept telling me to tithe. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to keep tithing this little $3. Sometimes it was 30 cents. It was literally not a lot of money, but it said the tenth. It didn't say a tenth of what. It just said a tenth. And so one of the cheer moms worked at the unemployment office. And this is right when Detroit, because I'm from Detroit, was just coming on the upswing from the recession crash. Okay. And so they were about to do a mass hire at Ford Motor Company, but they didn't put it out to the public. They wanted to hire people that was already on unemployment. Or in the unemployment system.
Okay.
So she contacted me and she said, hey, this is about to happen. Get into the unemployment system. And so I can make sure you get an interview. Okay. Me and a couple other coaches.
Okay.
I said, okay. And I work with my God family. So my God sister, me, my God mama, you know, yeah, we all get chilling together. And so we all applied, or me and my God sister applied. And I was the one that got it. I got the job. Okay. And the Lord clearly told me it was because I tithed. It was because I was obedient with a little, which knew he meant he knew I was going to be obedient with a lot.
Okay.
And so I got the job. That job helped me clear off some debt, helped me do some other things. But while I was there, I noticed that it really wasn't for me. It was there for a stepping stone. But so many people, they got trapped by the lifestyle it created.
Absolutely.
You make so much money from doing overtime and all these things. And so you get a home and you get cars, and you have children, and then you can't leave the job because of how much money. And so, but they couldn't enjoy it. So I didn't want to do it. I was in class one day and a recruiter came up to me talking about the military. And I was like, well, my daddy been telling me to go to the military, all this other stuff. So I decided to look into it. And then I end up telling people about it. Like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. And that's the worst thing ever when you are in a crossroads, just to open up your mouth and just start telling people.
Yeah.
Because so many people, it's like, you have the dream of a lifetime. Because what people, I don't know, a lot of people may not know, but in Detroit, in the Midwest, getting jobs like that at Ford Motor Company, Honda, Chrysler, government jobs, is like, you have made it. That is what everybody wants, is to have security in that type of thing.
Okay.
And so there's like, you have jobs people want, people three times your age, you should be grateful. So I started to think I was maybe ungrateful because I didn't like the job anymore. I was like, it served its purpose to me. So I felt ungrateful. And so then I was like, well, I'm just going to stick it out, Lord. You gave me this job. I'm just going to be quiet and I'm just going to do this thing. And the more I did it, the more I just didn't like it. I just couldn't. And I was just like, but it wasn't a bad job. It just wasn't for me.
Absolutely.
And so I went to church and I was praying at a youth service one day. And Laura, let me backtrack. Actually, right after that, I got an offer for a supervisor position for $60,000.
Okay.
And it was like, $60,000? That's a lot of money at 18, right? 18, 19. It's like, what? I'm a millionaire. And so then I, dumb, told my family that, right? I just got a supervisor. Now I really don't know what to do. And they looking like, you don't know what to do. Sir, you better be quiet and take a position. And so I went to church, prayed about it, and the Lord clearly told me to go to the military. And just to fast forward, I ended up joining the military, followed that intuition and joined the military. A year later, after me being in the military, mind you, I went from getting paid maybe $700-$800 a week, because we got paid a week, to getting paid $1,500 a month. So my income was going to reduce dramatically. I don't know if a lot of people know this, people in the military don't get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because they think benefits help, which you do get a lot of benefits, but as far as liquid cash, you don't get a whole lot of that. And so I joined the military, and a year after I joined, and it was rough. It was tough to have my bills, to have my mind getting paid from every week to getting paid twice a month, you know. They closed that shift, and everybody got laid off.
No way.
Uh-huh. Everybody got laid off.
Okay.
And so at that time, I was like, oh, I'm right where I'm supposed to be
at.
I'm right where
Absolutely.
I'm supposed to be at. And so I did that, and a year before I got out the Navy, I got out the Navy because of my weight. I couldn't renew my contract.
Okay.
I decided I wanted to get into entertainment. I always knew I wanted to have a talk show. And so as I looked, I was like, okay, people who have talk shows, that's not usually their career. That's usually a byproduct of their career. The only person that was their career was Oprah, but that's Oprah, right? So everybody else is like a fashion designer, a comedian, an actress, or something like that. They parlay into that. So I kind of assessed my own skill level, my own skills, and I knew I had a decent personality, a good personality, people have told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what can I do with that? You know, comedy, not that type of person. I could sing, but I ain't about to sing, you know? So So then I was just like, well, oh, radio. I can do radio. I said, so I looked to see how to start radio, and I started to idea podcast. Okay. LA Talk Radio was one of the first podcasts people I actually looked into. I didn't go with them at the time, but that was the first. This is before podcasts was popular. Sure. So LA Talk Radio has been around for a minute.
Yeah, they have.
And so I ended up going with another podcast format, and I did that for about 2 years. And then it was time for me to get out. So then I went on every radio station, went in my uniform, knocked on every single radio station's door in San Diego. It was maybe about, I want to say 10, 12.
Yeah.
And they all were nice to me because I was in the military and I had my uniform on. I did that on purpose. And they all said, you know, that was nice. But two radio stations contacted me back, 1700 AM and 98.1. And out of the two, one of them wanted me to do promotions, which is 1700 AM, and 98.1 wanted me to do social media.
Okay.
And 98.1 called me back. It was a small station, independent, had just started 2 years ago, 2 years at that time, mm-hmm. and they needed somebody to come do social media. I was the youngest thing in there. So I was like, okay, so I did social media, and I was doing it, and I lied and said I knew how to do it. I didn't, but I learned on the job. It was fine.
Absolutely.
And as I was there, they had said they were launching a new division called the music division because they weren't doing good. This is before podcasts got up. That's why I keep saying this because people are like, what? Mm-hmm. It was a talk station, but at the time, talk shows were not doing, talk radio shows were not in the groove 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, we're going to launch a music division, but they didn't have enough money. They just started the company. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't have enough money to hire new hosts. So they were trying to think of creative ways. Like, okay, we can do a playlist. We can do this stuff. Yeah. We can do certain things. And I listened. I was in a meeting. And I raised my hand. I was like, I will do a show. That's what I came here for. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, fill out a form. And they kind of just passed me back. Yeah, like, okay. And then I asked again the next week. And I think I asked again 2 weeks later. Enough time to where I wasn't a pest, but I would just be like, hey, what's going on? I submitted the form. Have you heard anything about it? I would just kind of tiptoe back into it. Mm-hmm. The last time, I know they was like, brother, oh my God. So then they was like, you can have a show.
You're persistent.
Yes, yeah. I was persistent. But I had everything together. They said you have a show. Didn't have a budget. They weren't going to give me a team, but they gave me studio time.
Okay.
I'm like, that's all I need, absolutely. Right? So I went out there. I was like, okay, well, can I bring in my own people? They was like, yes, if they sign forms and waivers and stuff like that, they'll be volunteers. I said, okay. So I went to a bunch of festivals and radio summits and entertainment things like that, networking. I print up flyers, radio station looking for volunteers or interns who want to get in the radio. And so, people really like, I'm like, I'm going to get a team together. I did that. So I end up doing that. We end up, long story short, we end up having a show, end up being a number one show on the station Fridays, 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then while I was doing that, I ended up getting invited to a award show. Had Sequence on, Red Sequence, Jackie and my team. We sat in the front row. And one of the chairmen asked me to come upstairs because by this time I was kind of getting known in San Diego a little bit. They asked me to come upstairs and I saw my now mentor slash godmother Elaine Swan, who's an etiquette expert on television. She does a lot of stuff with MSNBC and, you know, all that type of stuff. Good Morning America. And so I saw her. We laughed. We kiki. She was on a reality show called Foxes Kicking and Screaming. And she asked me to come to her watch party that Wednesday. This was a Sunday. I said, okay, great. I said, oh, actually, next Sunday, my radio guest just canceled. You should come to my radio show and we can promote the show. So I saw her twice in 1 week. And so then we instantly clicked. And at the radio station, after we got done, she was like, you need to be in Los Angeles. She's like, you have a very great presence. You have really great energy. You need to be in Los Angeles. And you're hiding behind the mic. She's like, you're somebody who needs to be on the television. People need to see it. Wow. And so that was the first time I was like, oh, okay, all right. And at the time, the radio station was in. My show was ending. I didn't renew the contract. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get renewed. My rent, the place where I was staying, it was up. I had to look for a new place. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, it was just like this window of just opportunity. Absolutely. And so then I was like, I'm going to do it. And I was like, you know what? The Lord going to meet me in L.A. The Lord going to meet me in L.A. And a lot of people get that. The reason why I say I have to stress that is because a lot of people get that confused about faith. A lot of people think faith is, I'm going to wait for the Lord to tell me. I'm going to wait for the Lord to reveal it to me. I'm going to wait for the Lord to show me. That's logic. You're actually leaning onto your own understanding, believe it or not. A lot of people get that confused. Faith is that I'm going to jump and I'm going to believe the Lord going to have a parachute or the Lord going to have something for me. And if not, I'm going to get a little bruised. I'm going to back on up. Right? That's really what faith is, that I'm moving. And so I was like, the Lord gonna meet me in L.A. So I took out a loan, $5,000. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the money, and moved to Los Angeles, and then just started taking off from there.
This is from San Diego.
Yes.
To L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love
that.
Yep.
So the military moved me to San Diego, and from San Diego to L.A. That's how I just did that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now you're out here.
Yes.
And did you sit and make a plan of action? Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Or what was that like when, all right, you get the phone call. Hey, I am a contestant.
Okay. So this was 2 years. So I've been in LA for 2 years at this time. Uh-huh. Now I'm almost on 3 years. And I was coming to LA and I knew what I wanted to do vaguely. I knew I wanted to do talk show. Okay. And I knew nobody in entertainment. So I was like, okay, well, what can I do? I ended up deciding I was going to be an audience member at as many talk shows and game shows as possible. Mm-hmm. Let me just go and like and be a student of the craft. And watch. I remember seeing Adriana Bailon. She would always keep her back straight. And I would go see. And I saw Tyra Banks when she was doing America's Got Talent. And she, how laser focused she was into the camera and how all of them read teleprompters really well. And mm-hmm. I just really studied. I didn't go there to be hammered and be like, oh my God, celebrities. I really just studied how many cameras do they have on each set? Mm-hmm. You know, all these type of things. And I got a chance to talk to Steve Harvey. So I ended up going to Family Feud and they said we can ask questions. And Steve is very personable. And so we all asked the question, 200 people, and they said, if you pick your question, you know, it is what it is. So he picked my question and he told me to stand. He said, whose question was this? I asked, what can I do to become, to do what you do and doing talk shows and game shows? He said, whose question is this? He said, stand up if this is your question. I was in the front row. I stood up. And he says, he looks at me, he says, look and see what they're doing on TV and replicate that. I thought it was my clothes. So I'm like, well, I don't know. I said, okay. And then he was about to go back. He's about to say cut. And I was like, well, nope, Steve, hold on now because I got your attention. I need you to clarify a little bit. I want you to dive in because I was confused and I didn't want to have an opportunity where I got a chance to talk to somebody in the position and didn't make sure I was very clear on what my next steps were. So though I held up production, I was just like, didn't really care. You got to tell me what you meant.
So you took advantage, not of the opportunity, but in it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. That's a big, big difference. Uh-huh. I think a lot of people try to go into opportunities and like, how can I maximize this? Looking from a big scope. It's just once you get in there, mm-hmm. how do you maximize each and every second that you're in right. there? And that's really what it was. And so he told me I had dreads. And so he told me to cut my hair. He said, I need you to cut your hair. First, he asked me, he said, what type of host do you want to be? Do you want to be on, you know, BET or Centric, or do you want to be on ABC, CBS? He said, that depends a lot. And I'm just going to be honest with you. And I said, I want to do ABC. I want to be a mainstream host. Okay. He said, you need to cut your hair. He was like, though, that is nice and it looks good on you and young people like it and stuff. Like, a lot of people who are on the boards for these shows are older Caucasian people, and they can't necessarily appreciate that look. And so you're going to have a barrier already. He's like, now you can keep it, right. you know, but just understand what you're going to fight against. He was like, there was no difference between him and Cedric and D.L. Hughley and all those people. He said the reason why he was able to catapult was because his new wife tightened up his suits. He no longer had baggy suits. He cut his hair. He became more refined, and that's really the word he was looking for. Okay. And so he's like, once he became more refined, he was able to take off. So I cut my hair, mm-hmm. and then next week is when I, as I was going to these different places, I saw they always had an audience warmer with a DJ, and so I was like, I want to do that. Yeah, so I started, yes. And so I was like, okay, but I didn't know how to DJ at the time. I was a radio host, and so I was like, okay, let me get paired up with a DJ. So I went on Craigslist to see DJs. Maybe I can get paired up with them, and we can do like, you know, I could be the host and I could be a DJ. Mm-hmm. And I saw a company that was hiring, looking for DJ MCs for private events and stuff like that, and they would teach you how to DJ, but you had to have a personality.
Are you serious?
No. It was just like lining up. But it didn't. I didn't know. The reason why I'm saying it like this, and I know I'm being kind of slow in the steps, because I want people to know that's the next step didn't get revealed until I jumped. I had no in my mind that I was going to be a DJ. I didn't think about that. Didn't happen until I went to the talk shows. The talk shows didn't happen until I moved to LA. I didn't have a plan going out. I didn't go to LA with a plan. I got mm-hmm. there. I was like, okay, what's my next step? And so when I got there, and I did the interview. They liked me. They taught me how to become a DJ. I learned how to DJ about mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years ago. Went through the academy. And then as I was doing a lot of private events, of course, in LA, there are producers that you do private events for. And then that's how I end up getting on other talk shows, GSN and all that stuff. And from there, I got in the circuit of getting auditions for stuff. Wow. And I got the audition for Khloe Kardashian.
I absolutely love, man, your story.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the fact that, I don't want to say it was a full-blown crisis, but you go from $700 a week mm-hmm. to $1,500 a month mm-hmm. to now I've got to live on a loan and my faith has got to be exercised. Mm-hmm. That can kind of put you in a tailspin. But what would you say your saving grace was there where I'm not going back to Detroit?
That wasn't an option. That really wasn't an option. But the thing is, the one thing that you said earlier that I thought was really great was your gift will make room for you. One of the things about a crisis that I wanted to piggyback up piggyback on is that a lot of people don't, the worst case scenario is that they don't recognize when they're in a crisis. To be in a crisis and not recognize that you're in a crisis is probably the worst thing ever. Okay. And I knew at the time when I got here, I was in a crisis, meaning I had no money and I had to make it work, right? And so when you, the thing earlier that when you were talking about your gift will make room for you, that is so true. But people have to know their gift. Because if you don't know your gift, how is it going to make room for you? How do you know if it made room for you right now? You in it and you don't know, right? And so before I went, one of the things that I did know coming down here was one of my gifts in, of the spirit, which is wisdom. Mine's is wisdom. And so, and they have knowledge. You can have a diverse tongue, all the rest of them. But I knew what mine's was through prayer and going to Bible study and stuff like that. The Lord revealed it to me. And so I always leaned on that, the word of wisdom. There's a difference between wisdom and word of wisdom. I don't want to get too deep into scripture, but there's a difference. And so I leaned on to word of wisdom, which is really, if you look in the Bible, the word of wisdom, word is God, because in the beginning was the word, and the word was God, word was with God. And so God's wisdom. So I leaned on to that. And James really talks about, so anybody who has the gift of wisdom need to read the book of James, because it really dives into wisdom. So if that's your gift, you need to read that book. And it talked about how it was a lifestyle, how you had to be humble, how you had to pray. So I did all these things that I talked about in James, and the Lord revealed to me through wisdom on what I needed to do next, how to go on Craigslist or to do this or do that, you know. Because wisdom uses knowledge to act. Knowledge is getting the information. Wisdom is how to act upon it in the appropriate way.
I absolutely love that. You know, you're teaching my language.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you came out of that. That was your upbringing, but you're still immersed in it even out here.
Yeah,
and you know, LA.
It's
kind of hard sometimes.
Yes.
Stay focused. What keeps you focused?
Knowing where I want to go and how that's a big leap, and I can't do it on my own, because if I could, I would have been did it. And so that keeps me there. Moving to LA, it did shift my perspective, you know, because I think where I'm from, sometimes we can use religion and spirituality as a crutch and as a box to enable us and stuff like that. And so what LA has done was has pulled me enough to shift me a little bit to know the difference between, you know, like religion and spirituality and kind of going through that.
Difference.
Yes, yes. And so that's what it has done for me. So I would never leave it, that's for sure, but it has evolved. It definitely has evolved.
Okay. Now, you're on this show.
And
you're unraveling the layers. I watched the clip and I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point? I mean, you can't, there's no way you can fake that. You do.
No.
Know that.
Yeah.
No,
with all me.
That. Why, after all of the years of carrying that around, why were you, what made you think, I'm ready to get, if I'm going to lose this weight, I've got to lose the weight.
So I knew, as I was, this is a harsh reality, but I'm just going to be honest.
Please,
I have always been honest.
Honesty and sincerity here.
I knew I had some advantages in life that worked for me, and I had some disadvantages in life.
Okay.
My advantages was my skin complexion. I'm a lighter skinned person.
Okay.
I knew I was a male.
Okay.
I knew I had youth on my side. I was younger. But what I did not have on my side was I had braces at the time. They don't like putting people on TV with braces or messed up teeth.
Okay.
I had weight. So though I am a light-skinned guy, I'm a black guy. So now I'm a big black guy, right? So now that was against me. And then I had my hair, because I had dreads, which was very ethnic. So as I assessed what was, and that's just me being honest with the system, what system I'm in. And so I was like, okay, what my pros and cons, what can I change and what can I change? And all the cons, quote unquote, to the system was changeable for me, right? My braces were going to come off. I can cut my hair. I can lose the weight.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I was going to do that. I was like, okay, but how am I lose this weight? Uh-huh. And the beginning of the year, I think this was last year, the year before last. I can't remember mm-hmm. when I taped. A lot of the times run kind of together for me. But I was praying. I brought in a new year praying because I do believe how you bring in a new year is how you're going to live your new year. So the year before, because last new year I was working. I've been working this whole year. Mm-hmm. So I was praying. And the Lord had revealed to me something big was going to happen this year. Something big was going to happen this year. Came like in my spirit. And I told the Lord, I don't want to know what it is. I was like, I don't want to know what it is because I'll mess it up. I said, because I'm the type of person, I like to go full hard in the paint, let me make it happen, and then mess something up or then burn too much energy. So I was like, don't tell me what it is, but now I know I'm going to expect something this year. Right. And then I got the job on Game Show Network, and that's why I was just like, oh, I thought that was it. And then right after that is how I got the show on Khloe Kardashian, and it was to lose weight. And that was the one thing I couldn't. My braces were already on my hair, but the last thing, remember where I was talking about assessing myself, was the weight. Mm-hmm. So I took the job thinking, I honestly thought it was just going to be a physical thing about the weight until I got on the show and they started hitting hard what the context of the weight was, what happened, how did you get here? And I was like, whoa, hold up. Yeah. I was just coming here to shed a couple pounds. What you doing? And so... And when I got on the show, it was very hard because then it started to reveal a lot about sexuality and Christianity, my father issues, stuff like that. And so what a lot of people didn't see, because I know some people were like, how did you transform like that in 12 weeks? I had therapy behind the scenes.
Okay.
The Lord was already working on me, of course, hearing all this stuff. The Lord had been working on me the whole time. So this was kind of like icing on the cake. So it wasn't like all of a sudden in 12 weeks I did all of this. This was like a prep for me to get to this point. I did therapy behind the scenes. And so once the emotional baggage started to come away, the physical did. Because in the first half of it, the first 6 weeks, I didn't lose a whole lot. I think I maybe lost maybe like 12 or 14 pounds or something like that. But once I kind of like was like, you know what? This is what it is. I'm sexually fluid. I'm still a Christian. I still love the Lord. That doesn't change anything. Once I came to kind of terms to with that, me and my father just don't get along. I need to let it go. All these type of things. The weight was starting to come off.
Okay.
And so once the mental started to change, the physical did.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. There was a part that I think had I been in the audience or in the with the family,
when
you began to read, you know.
Oh, the poem.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that was the juxtapose? That was where you said at some point now with the book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You had to go back and kind of give us
the picture. So after I got done with the show, I really was like, okay, wow, this was a lot. I really transformed a lot. I transformed a lot.
You look amazing.
Thank you, thank you. And so I was, I pitched the idea to a publisher for me to do a book. And originally the book was going to be about poetry because that's what people saw on the show. That was my outlet. So I had a bunch of poems.
Okay.
And so I wanted to just put out a book of poetry and hopefully people can resonate because the poems were relative to certain emotions.
Okay.
And once we did it, they liked the idea. They said yes. And we sent it to a focus group. And once we sent it to the focus group, they liked it, but they couldn't see how it connected at that time. They didn't understand. So without you seeing the show, it was just like, and I didn't want to have anything that you needed to see something else to see. I wanted to have a standalone.
For sure.
And so one of the things that came back to me was to add more context and talk about my journey, like how it happened, go more in detail than where the cameras went or give backstory to getting up to that point in time. And so that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we came up with Headache, Heartbreak, Healing, and Happiness, because it's called Colorful Confessions from Headache and Heartbreak to Healing and Happiness. And really what it is every emotion as I was going through my journey, I realized fits into one of those four categories. It's either going to be headache, heartbreak, something for healing, or something for happiness. Any emotion, any situation, anything is going to fit into one of those four categories.
Sure.
And so then that's why I wrote the book about each stage that I went through, when I can identify why I went through each one of those stages, and I have actionable steps on how to get from one stage to the next.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
So you really do paint the picture. You tell that story.
Yes.
And there are so many people that need this.
Yes,
you didn't know that, right?
I didn't at the time. Here's the thing. The truth is, this might sound so crazy, is that I really thought I was the only person. I was the only one. I'm the only one going through this. You know, and one of the things is, it's a quote in the book that I have that says, my pastor told me this, the devil's greatest weapon is to make you feel alone. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was just me, you know, woe is me type situation. But then when the show came out, I had my phone number on Instagram. Take your phone number off Instagram. But I got so many phone calls and DMs and emails and text messages and from people who were going through the same thing, yeah. And not just even about sexuality. That was some of it. That really was some of it. But having issues with your parents, period, right? Someone was alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. How did you deal with that?
Right.
Religion, them having their own issues with religion, had nothing to do with sexuality. It could be them having religious hurt or whatever, coming into their own self, being vulnerable. All these types of things, multiple layers that I realized were to my story. At the time, I didn't realize it, you know. And once I saw that, I was like, "Whoa, okay, yeah." So this is something. This is a platform I can let use me versus me use it.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, You mentioned that the DMs and the phone calls because people are hurting. What would you suggest to someone who's watching or who's listening now and saying, I hear what you're saying, Daron, but, you know, I'm from a small town. I you know, people don't think, you know, the way I'm thinking now. What would you suggest to someone that says, I want to be where you are? I've dreamt of this. As a matter of fact, I can't sleep anymore because this is all that I dream about.
I would tell anyone who is in the beginning stages to first, you have to move. Belief comes from momentum. That's just the reality of it. Okay. It's hard to believe in something if you ain't started nothing, you know. So belief comes from momentum. Momentum comes from movement. Mm. Movement comes from action.
Okay.
So you got to just move.
I didn't know
what I was going to do in LA. I never thought I'd do reality television. I never thought I would do that. That was just never my thought. I never thought I'd be a DJ. That was just never my thing. I do business etiquette and personal growth stuff. So it was like, what was that for? But it happened because I moved blindly. Just, I was like, I'm tired of this. Let me move somewhere. Let me just go. I joined the Navy. You know, so after you start to take action and then you start having movement, the more movement you have, momentum, it starts to create a flywheel. The more momentum you start to have, and then you so happen to take a look back and you start to see how far you've came just in this little amount of time or how far you're on your pathway, then the belief starts to form. Okay, maybe I can believe this. Okay, this is what happens. So that's what I would tell somebody. You just have to move. It's like blindly. You just got to run. You just have to.
You just got to do it.
Yeah. I know it sounds very cliche. It's like that's more easier said than done. No, it's not. If your lease is coming up, don't do this. Your credit was bad at home. Your credit going to be bad out here. You had a loan before. Take out a bigger loan. That's what I'm saying. You just have to go. You just have to go and no holds bar. Steve Harvey was one, and I talk about him again because he was one of the first celebrities who I met, him and Lisa Ray. He left his family, his twins, you know, and he just had to go. Some people will say like, wow, that's kind of messed up, but look how that turned out.
Absolutely.
You know, you just have to just go. And I'm not telling anybody to abandon their kids. That's not what I'm saying. But you just have to move. You have to move. The belief will not come until you start to take action.
You referenced James. Does he not say that faith without
works is dead? And that's my favorite quote. That's my favorite scripture. Faith without works is dead.
Absolutely.
A lot of people in religion, in the religious community, claim to have the faith, but they don't put the works. They use the faith to cover the works.
That was me.
Yeah.
I'm raising my hand here.
That was
me for so many years. Until, and I've told the story over and over again, but it was the 17th day of a 40-day fast where I said to my husband, I closed my Bible. I said, I'm done. I can't do it anymore.
Really?
And he said, oh, dear God, she hasn't eaten in 17 days and she's losing her mind. But I've got to lose my mind. I've got to get the mind of Christ.
Yeah.
Because if I do not, I'm going to keep praying and praying and praying.
Yeah.
And not doing anything.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not that I wanted it to fall from the sky, but I wanted it to fall from the sky.
Yeah,
I just believe that he was just going to ring the doorbell and say, here you go. And I'm not bashing religion.
No.
Because I came out of religion for the kingdom's sake. Now I have to be a student of the kingdom of God. And what does that look like? So that's a lifestyle. that Dr. Miles Monroe, one of my favorite teachers that he teaches, even from the grave, rest in peace, sir, that I'm still learning. Dr. Miles Monroe, he has a series on kingdom.
Miles Monroe.
I'll
write it down.
Absolutely. When you are ready for that, your entire life changes, your mindset changes, how you talk changes, and people that you find yourself associating with. You're not isolating yourself, but you're listening intently. Okay, what do I need to do now?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
What is next for the man who said, you know what, I'm going?
Well, next, I have a podcast coming out called The Perspective. That's really, really great. And it's about helping people challenge their perspective.
Absolutely.
About what's happening, because that's really what happened with me. And also in 2020, because I do believe this, I believe 2020 is a magical year for anybody who's alive, you know, with 2020 vision, you know, all these things. Right. I think get your stuff together. Anybody that's listening, I would say get your stuff together to really capitalize on the year that you are blessed to be in, the year 2020. Okay. And so I've always had D-Rant Entertainment Company, but I'm launching a new leg of my business called Anderson & Hooper Advisory Group.
Okay.
And so that's where we offer business etiquette, business development, and personal growth services. Because a lot of people didn't know that. They don't know that I have my bachelor's in business.
Right.
My certification, I have a certification in marketing, another certification in business etiquette.
Okay.
I also I'm finishing up my master's of business administration degree as well.
Oh,
and so, yeah, so I'm a student of business. I love business.
Love
I love it.
I do too.
Yeah.
Really do.
And not everybody had the opportunity. This is what made me decide to do the business.
Okay.
It's not everybody has the opportunity or the resources to go to school, or have mentors and stuff like that. I was fortunate enough, I joined the military. So I have little to no financial debt. So I got all of that knowledge and stuff for my time in service.
Okay.
As well as me moving out to LA and getting connected with Elaine and other business moguls and celebrities and stuff like that, to learn from them and mentorship. So it's really, I have seven or eight years of worth of business knowledge on the job, mentorship, education, and not everybody was blessed with that opportunity.
Right.
So basically what I'm doing is I'm taking concepts and I'm taking them into 2-hour workshops, not bite-sized, because you didn't have the opportunity or the resources, that doesn't mean you don't have a gift. That doesn't mean that you don't have a revolutionary idea. That doesn't mean you don't have a business inside of you. That doesn't mean that you're not an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The cars just was not in your favor to do this. And so that's what I want people to do, because not all you. I went through 4 years, and a lot of them classes repeat themselves. Start to repeat themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, if you're trying to find your target audience, let's start talking about that. Here's a workshop for that. Here's a workshop for this. Here's a workshop to find your mission and vision. Here's a workshop for you to do stuff like that. So it's very bite-sized pieces, and meat and potatoes for people.
I absolutely
Yeah,
love
how to maneuver
that.
In business. A lot of people don't understand that.
Right.
Like when you're introducing somebody in business, you're supposed to introduce the person of most importance in that time to the one of least importance, quote unquote. So if a billionaire is there, but they're talking to the person in charge of a radio station, and the billionaire wants to get into the radio game, the radio station owner is the most powerful person in that section. So you introduce the radio station person to the billionaire, not vice versa.
Absolutely.
So just certain things like that. People don't, in today's time where everybody has to be their own brand, and 401ks is kind of like a thing of the past, you need to know how to operate in business. You need to know how to conduct yourself on social media. You need to know how to do these things when you're networking. And so I have a bunch of workshops for business etiquette, business development, and stuff like that I'll be offering.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I told you. Didn't I tell you that this guy? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So outside of you, the brand.
Okay.
What do you like to do? What do you like to do for fun?
I love going to the movies.
Really?
I just saw Queen and Slim. That was the last movie I just saw.
Yeah, we saw that last evening.
Yeah.
Stacey and I. What did you think about it?
I thought it was really, really great. One of the things that really stuck out to me heavily was how it, I don't want to give it away.
I know, right? I know,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, but it's an ending. There's an ending. And, I was very surprised at who was for them and who wasn't.
Come on.
That was a very interesting a thing, you know. And so that was one of the things that really stood out to me and really would have taught me or really reaffirmed with me is don't judge a book by its cover. You know, you cannot judge a book by its cover because in the movie, the people or people that you think was like, you ain't really for, you gon' did not. No, and then, but the people that you think are for them really, and so it was really like you have to take a person, you can't judge a book by its cover and you really have to vet people. You really have to vet people.
In the vetting process, were you, because you do operate in the gift of wisdom, were you always in the process of who's for me and who's
against? Yes, because I'm a Cancer too. So I'm a Cancer. Cancers are, we're very emotionally intuitive, very sensitive, really sensitive. Forgive us. But I always think like that. I think I always tell people this when I do coach, because I do business coaching for private clients. Okay. The first thing I tell them with networking, business networking, is you have to think of networking and relationships like a business, like a bank. It's like a transaction. You cannot take anything out before you put something in. Okay. You cannot ask anything of a person before you've given them something. Okay. And in a bank, if you do decide that you want to pull something out before you put something in, it's called credit. You got to pay interest. Right. And you have to be approved, and it has to be worth it. Right? So I always tell people, think of relationships like bank transactions. Have you put enough in for what you're about to ask to take out? And if you have not, what is the interest you're about to pay on it? And if you think of stuff like that, that really puts you in the mindset of servitude, if you really being honest, right? How do I service this person before I can ask anything?
Absolutely. And that is the kingdom principle.
Yeah.
We call it servant leader.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you have to.
Yes.
You serve people with your gifts.
Totally.
And that is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're such a blessing.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. How can people stay interactive with you?
On social media, Deran Anderson, that's D-E-E-R-A-N Anderson. Okay. On all social media, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, as well as DeranAnderson.com. They can purchase the book at DeranAnderson.com, as well as Amazon.com. I have the paperback version, which we just got in. We sold out, but we just got them back in. And we have the Apple book version on Apple and Kindle on Amazon as well.
Okay.
Yes, it's really good. We're on Barnes & Noble. I think Nook, they just told me we were on that as well.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, yeah,
Did
yeah.
Did you ever think that this is my life, this could happen, and now this is my life?
No, because I was the kid in school that got D's and C's.
Okay.
I was that kid. Okay. I was barely just did it, barely made it, barely. Yeah. And so I never thought, and reading and writing has always been my weakness. My strong suits has always been a strategic thinking, strategy, critical thinking. Those have always been my attributes. Mm-hmm. But reading and writing has always been my weakness. So to do a book, I really never even thought I can do a book. When I was little, I didn't have no rhythm, so I never thought I'd be a DJ. Like, you know, you just don't know how life is just going to, like, take you into a fold.
Yeah.
And so, but through writing the book and through an app called Grammarly, those two things have taught me so much. Within the past 2 years, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about grammar and stuff like that, just on the job. I mean, really working and writing.
But, you know, you're open to life.
Yes.
You know, you really,
really are. I'm very open to life. I think that's, some people fall in, I try to stay in the middle because some people are like, I only want this.
Yep.
I have to have it this way. It has to be this way. If it's not this way, it's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I want to have a kind of a translucent type of opinion on life. Like, I know I want to have a talk show, but how that happens and the road that I have to take to get there, I'm just going to flow with it. Whatever comes my way, it may not look like how I thought. I'm just going to roll with it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then you, and I love the fact that I'm listening to what you're not saying.
Okay.
Your steps really are ordered of God. You do know that, right?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. You don't make it to
thank
what
you.
You're doing. And success is not the material things. We know better than that.
Yes.
Success is doing exactly what you were put in the earth to do.
Yeah.
That's success.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the measure of what you got to answer for.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah, yeah.
What did you do with your time?
Yes.
What did you do
with
your
gifts? Were you a good steward of your time?
Absolutely.
Were you a good steward of your money? Were you a good steward of your health? Were you a good steward? Yeah.
Yeah. So when you go back home, do people treat you different now?
Yeah, I mean, no, not my, it's so funny. My grandmother, she was just like, You're just the same, D-Ran, you know. But it was nice to go. I went home this past Thanksgiving, and I was in the America's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So they asked me to be on the float. I was on the Turkey Trot float. So I did a kind of a press run there. So that was kind of cool. That was actually to go where you're from and people to kind of recognize you and such an acclaimed level. It was crazy that I had to have handlers. I was just like, I felt like Obama. I was just like, what? Oh, my God. That was so cool. You know, and it really helped me see that in L.A., we're kind of in a bubble here in Los Angeles.
I've heard that so many times.
Yeah, because when the show I did here, that show, and I've done other stuff like Game Show Network and stuff like that. And here, that's kind of a drop in the bucket. It's kind of like, which I'm still on the bottom totem pole, trying to climb my way up. Outside of Los Angeles, it's like, oh my God, you're D-Ran. Oh my God, that's so crazy. And so it really made me, help me with my perspective as well to kind of get outside of the city for a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have to say this. Mm-hmm. I am truly grateful that you did not quit.
Thank you.
You have truly been a blessing to me today. I'm getting
really because thank you.
You have no idea. You said never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
Your testimony, mm-hmm. and I'm sure other people can relate to this if they're honest. Your intuitiveness, your I'm not going to quit no matter what. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got to cry, but guess what? I'm going to get back up and try this thing again. That is a testimony in and of itself for the resolve that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
And the resolve that
you
have in him.
Yes, yes.
So thank you. Thank you for living. Thank you for being you said you were described as an influencer. Personal growth.
Yes, influencer. I do personal growth. I'd say personal growth and business etiquette influencer.
I absolutely love that. Yeah. Thank you so very much for being a part of this show. Thank you for showing us how it's done. Aww. Thank you for telling us, you know what? Not against religion, but it doesn't work if you're not going to put in the work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
There's some great things that are happening in your life and that will be happening. And I am so grateful to God that you did not quit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I really, this was a blessing for me as well when you're talking about a crisis because, just to reveal I don't know if you have time to tell you this really quickly, you know, once you do a show and stuff like that, sometimes it's hard for producers and stuff to book you and other stuff because they think they see you in one role. So I'm kind of in this in-between where I've done all this stuff, but how do I kind of get to, and so now I'm like, oh my God, okay, what's happening, Lord? And you know, so when you were talking about that in the beginning, I was just like, okay, my gift will make room for me. I didn't come this far because I start going to old cast of producers for go back to Game Show Network, and they was like, you're kind of too big to be here. And they wouldn't let me. And I'm like, wait, my pockets don't say that. Hold on. Now I need the money. And so now I'm kind of like, I'm going to ride it out.
He's got you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you guys for joining us today. You've got to get the book.
Yes.
What's the name of the book again?
Colorful Confessions.
And they can find it
on Amazon.com and DRANanderson.com.
I absolutely love it. Thank you for joining us. I do not take you for granted. Thank you for being a part of the journey. Let's do life together. Don't forget, on Mondays, I'm at Facebook Live, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Talk to Tanji, where we get intimate. I need to hear from you because you're getting to where you are, where you need to be. It's going to help me get there, too. Thank you. I love you. And thank you for being a part of this
show.
Bye. And I am out.
You're listening to the Dr. Tunji Show with Dr. Tunji Scott, only on LA Talk Radio.